and Google Play. And if you want a third way to listen to all your favorite KBOO programming, then take an opportunity to download our mobile app today.
Community Radio is hiring a public affairs director to manage public affairs programming, ensuring that it is of the highest quality and consistent with the KBOO programming charter. For this 32 hours position, we are looking for someone with production experience in community radio, who has communication and training skills, and the ability to work independently in a fast-paced work environment. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. Deadline to apply is Friday, October 25th at 5 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm/PADHIRE2019.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. I'm in the studio with Howie Hawkins of the Green Party, and I'm going to be talking to him in just about 5 minutes. First, I want to go to my usual headlines and commentary. And I want to say that I'm glad to be back in Portland. I've been traveling by car, a 20-year-old Saturn, across the country from Portland to New York and back again. I went to the Grassroots Radio Conference. I've been trying to be attentive as I travel to things that will reveal the state of the American psyche, the economy, the climate, etc. And I'm sorry to say that stereotype seems to have some weight, that the rest of the country is vastly more conformist than the West Coast. I was stopped twice by police on trumped-up excuses until I took off two very gentle bumper stickers. You've probably seen them. One of the stickers is very common around here, showing an American flag and text saying, "In my America, various groups are respected, blah, blah." And the other says, "Someone else for president." Well, those evoked rage as I traveled. I could see people staring at them. So if you think you can exercise your free speech on the interstate roadways, think again. For one thing, people don't seem to use bumper stickers anymore. And it just doesn't fly, at least not in South Dakota and Minnesota, where I was stopped. The middle white homeland, middle white apartheid homeland, is not amused by dissent. And they're very enthusiastic about their white homeland and about white apartheid. And the first rule of getting white apartheid hegemonic power is thou shalt not talk about white hegemonic power. The economy is crushing workers from coast to coast. I'm thinking particularly of a burger server who seemed to tremble at the prospect of getting something wrong with her order. I wanted to guillotine her boss. That's hyperbole, in case you're tracking my statements. My poetic license is current and validated. And the climate, well, a record-breaking freak storm delayed me for days, blowing rain so hard I could not see, icing up the mountain passes. I did attend the Rochester Grassroots Radio Conference, Rochester, New York, and I'm glad to say that community radio is alive and well. People are starting up new stations with a website, a computer, a microphone, and a pirate transmitter. Glenn Ford of the Black Agenda Report gave a rousing history of black radio in the 70s that will echo across the world and on these airwaves. It wasn't just inspiring, it was a prescription for radio and revolution that applies well to these fascist times. I know you'll want to hear it. Now to headlines. It's 3 minutes after the hour. You're listening to KBOO Portland. From Radio Havana, Cuba, hundreds of Israeli settlers have violated the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied Old City of East Jerusalem, Al-Quds. On Tuesday morning, at least 300 Israeli settlers entered the compound from the Moroccan Gate, the Palestinian Information Center reported. Reports added that those settlers responded to calls made by extremist groups for mass break-ins at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound to mark a religious event. And now, speaking for myself, this is an ongoing thing in which these militarist extremists come in and try to provoke outrage from the religion of Islam. Returning to the text, on October 6th, more than 120 Israeli settlers also violated the compound from the same gate. So there's more on that on Radio Havana, Cuba. Also from RHC, Venezuela's ambassador to the United States Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization has denounced the impacts of the illegal economic, financial, and commercial blockade imposed by the United States on the South American nation. And speaking for myself, I'm reading this again because this is one of those things that goes on and on. The U.S. Knows that it can crush this nation in the eyes of the United States citizens will be somewhere else. Returning to the text, Ambassador Hector Constant pointed out that the illegal economic measures prevent Venezuela's development. Quoting, it affects the country's efforts to achieve the sustainable development objectives of the UN Agenda 2023. He added, confirming the veracity of his arguments, the Venezuelan diplomat recalled that the effects generated by the illegal blockade were recognized in a recent report by the United Nations Special Rapporteur on negative repercussions of unilateral coercive measures on the enjoyment of human rights. And quoting further, the illegal and brazen blockade of the Trump administration is intended to demoralize our values, but we have a culture of resistance that will overcome hegemony. We are living in a dangerous time for multilateralism. While the advance of the human genius invites us to think about artificial intelligence, the crudity of international reality means that many of the countries present must concentrate their efforts on an exercise of survival and just defense of their sovereignty, end quote. From KETV in Omaha, over 100 people marched through downtown Omaha on Monday morning to raise awareness of missing and murdered Native American women of Nebraska. And speaking for myself, this is something that I encountered as a news item, excuse me, as I traveled across the country. The murder of young, mostly young Native American women is going on apace, and it is shocking. Returning to the article, Loretta Magaisi marched in honor of her daughter who was killed in a shooting out of state. According to Native American Women's Nebraska Task Force, Nebraska and Omaha have a high number of missing and murdered Native American women. Omaha is number 3 in the United States for having the most unreported missing and murdered indigenous women cases. And there's more on that article at KETV. But right now, I am glad to be welcoming the Green Party presidential Green Party presidential primary nomination seeker, something like that, Howie Hawkins. And he is in the studio live. Welcome, Howie. Thanks for making it in.
Well, good morning. Thanks for having me.
I'd like to read some of the text that came with your secretary, Emma, who I was just talking with, who's also on the board. And Hawkins is the original Green New Dealer, and we'll be discussing the details of his eco-socialist Green New Deal. This is something that happened last night, I understand, in Salem. Is that right?
That's right.
And Hawkins is pleased to see Democratic candidates putting forth climate plans, but none go far enough. And so I won't quote you since you're here to quote yourself. And it says that in 2010, Hawkins was the first U.S. candidate to run on the Green New Deal. So it seems to me that that's what we should talk about first. What's happening with the Green Party, the Green New Deal, and what's your take on it?
Well, it's been the Green Party's signature issue for the last decade. I ran in 2010. We're coming out of the Great Recession, the housing and financial collapse. I'm running against Andrew Cuomo, who's touting himself as the real Tea Party candidate. The Republican was the guy we call Crazy Carl Paladino, a real estate developer from Buffalo who makes Trump look like a liberal. This guy is really an out-and-out racist and very mean-spirited man. So Cuomo's answer to the recession was no taxes on the rich, cut public employment, cut education spending, basically cut back to balance the state budget. Our answer, the Green New Deal, was tax the rich and put that money into the public sector, the schools and so forth, and also a massive investment in a transition to 100% clean energy. And we were saying by 2020 and 2010, because that's what the climate science carbon budgets said to rich countries like the United States should do.
And it's 2019, oops.
Yeah, here we are a decade later. So now it's gonna take a decade to do this. So at the end of 2018, the Sunrise Movement, the youth group, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez sat in at Nancy Pelosi's office, and the media ate it up. They were calling for a Green New Deal. It went viral. And by December, we had a poll saying 80% of the American people want a Green New Deal, including 64% of the Republicans. Now, the Democratic leadership has tried to kill it. The select committee that they were demanding for a Green New Deal, Pelosi sliced, diced, and threw that down to disposal. So they came back with the non-binding resolution for a Green New Deal. The problem is the Democrats took the brand and diluted the content. They extended the deadline from 2030 to 2050. They eliminated the demand for a ban on fracking and new fossil fuel infrastructure. They eliminated the phase out of nuclear power. and they didn't talk about big cuts in military spending to put that into the green energy transition. So here we are, but it wouldn't die. Every Democratic candidate's got some version of a Green New Deal. All of them except Bernie Sanders are not serious. They're talking about $1 to $3 trillion over 10 years in public spending to sort of prime the pump, and they're relying on tax incentives and regulations. And of course, the fossil fuel industry, the utilities, all the vested interests are going to gum that up and nothing's going to happen. Sanders brought back in those demands I said were eliminated. He's got the ban on fracking and fossil fuel infrastructures, the phase out of nuclear power. He talks about cuts in military spending without specifying how much. So he's got $16.3 trillion over 10 years. Now, I've come up with a budget with the help of an economist, a political economist named John Wren. We're $27 trillion over 10 years. And we think, Bernie, we show our homework. You go on my website, you click on the line item for the different parts of the budget.
And what is that website?
It's howiehawkins.us.
Okay.
Go under the Vision tab, and you'll see the budget for the eco-socialist Green New Deal. We show how we got our numbers. Bernie doesn't, but we think his numbers are good. The difference is he's on a longer timeline. He takes till 2050. That's not fast enough. So our eco-socialist Green New Deal, two things distinguish it from anything anybody else is talking about. One is we got to not only transform electricity, which is only 28% of the greenhouse gas emissions, we got to transform manufacturing, agriculture, transportation, and buildings. So that means we got to rebuild the manufacturing sector. We need to rebuild it on a basis of zero emissions and zero waste, which means, for example, instead of coke ovens to make steel, electric arc furnaces. We need a new cement that doesn't heat up calcium carbonate and put carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, which is 5 to 8% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions. Those kinds of things. And to do that, our manufacturing has been hollowed out. We don't even have a machine tool industry left. And you need that to build the intermediate goods and the consumer goods, including wind generators and solar panels and electric heat pumps. So that's the central piece. The other piece is we got to do this through the public sector. It's too late for a carbon tax. It's too late for regulations. We got to do what we did during World War II, and that is federal government facing, you know, Hitler, Tojo, and Mussolini, the fascist powers around the world. They said we got to turn industry on a dime into the arsenal of democracy to defeat these fascists.
It was emergency mobilization or die.
It was.
Or be subjugated.
And so they took over 25 or built 25% of the manufacturing capacity of the country. And they centrally planned it. They told the owners, go take a vacation. They brought in the managers and the workers, and they planned that transformation. We got to do nothing less for climate change. So we're talking about a public energy sector, a National Railroad Corporation to build bullet trains, electrified freight trains, and rebuild the trolley, the light rail systems we used to have in our cities, and then a public manufacturing sector. And the difference this time is after World War II, they just gave all that machinery and those factories back to the super rich and the corporations on pennies on the dollar. And we're saying we're going to keep it in the public sector and lease them to worker co-ops so that workers can control their own labor process and keep the full fruits of their labor.
It's really interesting to hear you say that, because years ago I had Naomi Klein sitting right where you're sitting talking to me, saying the same thing. And I guess it shows the power of agitating, you know, writing a good book and going about and putting your ideas forth. And you mentioned Bernie Sanders, too. So there seems to be some momentum for this. And I think a lot of people do understand that this would be a tremendous mobilization. I'm talking to Howie Hawkins of the Green Party. And the number to call if you would like to talk to Howie is 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Now, one thing that impinges on this discussion is military spending, because one of the things that you put out, I believe, I recall correctly, said that you would like to reduce the Pentagon budget to fund this Green New Deal in part.
Yeah, we're calling for a 75% cut in military spending, and that would actually be a, you know, not the biggest thing we need to do to raise the money to make these investments. The biggest thing we need to do is progressive tax reforms, a financial transactions tax, more progressive income tax, more progressive corporate income tax, a wealth tax, a state tax, a land value tax. And in our budget, you can go look online, we get $2.2 trillion that way. We get about half a trillion from military spending cuts, depending on whether you count just the Department of Defense or the Department of Energy, which does the nuclear power and weapons and some other parts of the federal budget. In any case, that still leaves about 1.3 or 4 trillion we need to raise, because our Green New Deal is not just the energy transformation. We call that the Green Economy Reconstruction Program. It's also an economic bill of rights. And that's a good thing that the non-binding resolution for a Green New Deal kept in. They kept in that old idea that Franklin Roosevelt called for in his last two State of the Union addresses in 1944 and 1945, asked Congress to enact. They never have, even though Democrats have had a president in both houses, every president from Truman to Obama. They haven't enacted any of these things. A job guarantee, the guarantee of an income above poverty, housing, affordable housing for all, comprehensive health care for all, public education, and we're saying lifelong from pre-K through college and technical school and adult continuing education, and a secure retirement. And we can talk about how we would do each of those programs. But our total program is $4.2 trillion, over a year, $2.7 trillion in green economy, green energy investments, and then $1.4 trillion a year for this economic bill of rights.
The follow-on effects from such expenditures would be huge in terms of revitalizing the economy, getting people off the streets, and helping to cure social divisions, I do believe. We have a caller. The number to call, 503-231-8187. I'm Teresa Mitchell. This is KBOO Portland, and I'm talking with Howie Hawkins, who is a candidate for the Green Party's nomination for president. And Joe is on the air.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I got a question, two not entirely unrelated, but not the exact same question about the platform you're talking about. One is, where does the question of the length of the working day and week come into the way that you're framing the way that the economy needs to change in order to not destroy the planet? It used to be, you know, you talk about during World War II and right before, you know, the federal government mobilizing the economy and taking it over. The other, like, big thing that happened in that time was the codification of labor rights and really the limits of labor's rights into the National Labor Relations Act and subsequent labor laws. And part of that was about ensuring the continued production of consumer goods. And part of that had to do with trading off the idea of reducing the work week, which had been the, like, major demand of the working class movements for the prior 100 years, and basically paying off the working class with the promise of, like, individual consumer paradise. And if we can't actually provide that, we're going to have to, you know, look to reducing the amount of stuff that we produce, and that means working less, and that's going to mean different things in different industries. But I'm wondering where that comes into the question of how do we transform the economy.
Okay, what you got to say about that?
Well, over the next decade, to do this transformation, the bottleneck will be labor. I mean, we calculate the number of jobs, including manufacturing jobs, that we get from these transformations, and it's more jobs than we have people to do the work in this country. That's the bottleneck. Now, over the long run, with productivity gains, the problem has been that the working class has not been getting the value that they're creating. They're getting exploited to a greater degree than ever. So we need a program to reduce the work week while keeping the pay, like 30 hours work for 40 hours pay. And that may require a tax system that then gives workers a second check so they get their fair share of productivity gains. In terms of dealing with the problem of us extracting too much from the environment and throwing too much waste back into the environment, which creates all kinds of environmental and ecological problems, what we're talking about in a planned eco-socialist economy for major sectors of the economy is we're going to stop planning for planned obsolescence. We can reduce the size of the economy as measured by GDP, which is exchange value, but also give people more use value because they'll get more use from the products that are created. That's one example of how we can have a higher standard of living with less impact on the environment. And that's, I think, the way we got to go. We got to shut down some things like the fossil fuel industry and the nuclear industry, and then we got to rebuild our manufacturing so it's clean and zero waste, so that we're, by recycling instead of wasting minerals, for example, we have less extraction, less mining, and less waste in the environment. So those are the kind of things we got to do. The other thing I'll say is, you know, about half the people in this country can't pay their bills every month. It's rent, utilities, groceries, and God forbid they get a medical bill. I talk about, you know, my campaign's focusing on three life and death issues: the climate crisis, the inequality crisis, and the new nuclear arms race. The inequality crisis: we now have a 20-year life expectancy gap between our richest and poorest counties. It's even greater when you break it down by census tracts. And that's because people, they don't, the guy that lived downstairs from me died this spring. He was on Medicaid. They told him he needed this kidney medicine, but he was worried about paying his rent and utilities. He didn't buy his medicine. His kidneys failed. That's the kind of thing that's happening over and over and over again. And so we can't say to people that are struggling that, you know, we got to go on less, because they're already on less. We got to do that. Like when we talk about taxes, you know, any progressive tax reform, the right and even the centrists will say, oh, you're raising taxes. Yeah, we're raising taxes on the rich, and we're providing tax relief to the working class. So we got to distinguish who needs to consume less and who needs to consume more.
All right. Does that answer your question, Joe?
It does. Thank you.
All right. How red are the greens? And the number to call, 503-231-8187, and I believe Annalise is on next.
Good morning.
Good morning, Annalise.
I'm happy to hear your voice again, Teresa.
Well, thank you. It's nice to hear yours.
I have a question. Thank you. I have a question for your guest, if he is willing to answer it. I agree with most everything he has to say. However, what do you think about Andrew Yang and his $1,000 a month subsidy to give to every person?
I don't think much about it. He wants to eliminate some other social supports. And why should Donald Trump, you know, get $1,000 a month, or Warren Buffett, or, you know, Zuckerberg,
yeah,
or Gates?
That was my objection too at first. But then other people would say, well, they don't need it, and they will put that into a charitable contribution and give it back that way.
Yeah, the rich got a lot of money. They got more money than ever. And look, we need change, not charity. I'm for a guaranteed minimum income above poverty, but the best way to do that is the negative income tax. So if you turn your tax reform and you're below the poverty level, you get a check every month to bring you up above the poverty line. And that way, the people that need it get it. If you give $1,000 to Trump or Gates or one of those people, the top marginal rate now is what, 39%? So they'll get, you know, keep 600 of those $1,000.
Yeah.
And that just isn't right. I mean, I don't think working class people want to be giving more money to the super rich.
Right. Well, I agree with that. So anyway, thank you very much. And I'm really happy to hear your voice. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
All right. You're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. I'm in the studio with Howie Hawkins of the Pacific Green Party. He's running for the Green Party's nomination for President of the United States. And you can call in with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. Now, impeachment has come at last. And people have been singing their impeachment carols and decorating the impeachment tree. I have. And although after all the failure to act with due diligence and in good faith for the American people, I'm not actually having a lot of faith in it. But I'd like to know how you feel, Howie, about impeachment proceedings in the House.
Sure. Just let me quick one thing. I'm not a member of the Pacific Green Party. I'm a member of the New York State Green Party.
New York State Green Party.
I'm from Syracuse, New York. So I'm visiting here. I want delegates, you know, to vote for me at the convention from the Pacific Green Party.
That's funny. I just came back from New York by car, but go ahead.
Okay. So the question was impeachment. I've been calling for the impeachment of this guy from the day he was elected because of the Emoluments Clause, and very soon to racism. That was Al Green's impeachment resolution. How can you effectively execute, faithfully execute the laws of the nation, which is what the Constitution says the president should do, when you are openly discriminating against and putting bigotry into your public policies? That disqualifies you right there. And unfortunately, very few Democrats voted for that. They had three opportunities. He's openly told police officers, Border Patrol officers, and others to break the law. So, you know, lawlessness is another ground. I mean, there are so many grounds to impeach this guy. He has a rap sheet that is a mile long. I mean, the corporate crimes this guy did. He should never have even, you know, got to where he is because of all the bank fraud, insurance fraud, wage theft, failing to pay contractors, and people he borrowed money from. I mean, this guy, there's so many grounds to impeach him. You know, now that they're finally doing it, my question is, what took you so damn long?
That seems to be a good question. that was a rather chafing. I thought at the time of the Mueller thing that they were likely to, no matter what, delay any proceedings that they might take until closer to the election. So, you know, maybe it was a tactical thing. I don't know. Well, now I'm interested to know what the what your position is and what your Green Party's position is on Trump's exacerbation of the hegemony of whiteness. What does the Green Party want to do about white supremacy?
Well, the white supremacists are a minority, but they got power because the Democrats have enabled them. The neoliberal corporate agenda, which both parties share in economics, and the Democrats as much as anybody, have created this insecurity in the white middle class, and they're the ones vulnerable to this fascist appeal to scapegoat immigrants, black people, brown people, any minority they can, you know, point the finger at, when in fact it's this whole corporate policy that has put people insecure. And so they've been able,
if I may add, to cheerlead the police departments across the nation as they slay black people on any excuse.
Well, that's a whole nother question. We got a clean house in our police departments. I mean, Trump pulled back, for example, the federal consent decrees in Ferguson and Baltimore, basically said, go ahead and do what you've been doing, the racist policing. We know the right wing white racists have systematically tried to get the people in the military, border patrol, and police departments. They're organized in there. So we need to clean house, you know, starting with the abolition of ICE and border patrol. I'm for open borders like they do within the EU. You know, Mexico, the border moved on to Mexicans and the indigenous people, and now they're the people in the camps. They didn't move the border. That happened in 1848, but, you know, a lot of those people have families on both sides. They should be able to move freely, work, shop, reside, take vacations, and it'll benefit both sides. Right now, that border divides the working class. They use the undocumented workers to undermine all workers in this country, and they use the low wages in Mexico also to undermine the workers in this country. So we got to tear down that wall, open the borders, and then the labor movement's got to organize across the former border. So we need to replace the Border Patrol and ICE with an immigration agency, you know, just checking at the border. If there's not a warrant out for your arrest, welcome. And then in the police departments, this is something, I don't know if we can do much at the federal level. We can certainly provide incentives. We can stop selling military equipment, giving used military equipment to police departments.
Well, certainly the militarization of the police was done at the federal level.
That's right, and we can stop that because they are a peace force. They are not a military force. That's what they should be. They're supposed to protect and serve, not occupy our communities. So we need a whole house cleaning there. And then, you know, the problem of white supremacy is not only the attitudes that some people have, it's the fact that the racists are in power. They're the gatekeepers. They're the police, the judges, the lawyers, the real estate agencies or industry that has created a more segregated society than we had going into World War II in terms of housing around the country. I was just in L.A. I came up in California in a mixed neighborhood, you know, black, Mexican, Pacific Islander, Chinese, Japanese, white, everything. And I went to the Orange County Greens and I went to the Y there. Everybody in the Y was white. Then I went to East L.A. Everybody in the Y was Latino. I stayed a week in East L.A. I didn't see another Anglo in Boyle Heights, you know, walking on the street. It's incredible how segregated we've become. And it's these racist gatekeepers that have set that up. So what we need to do to defeat white supremacy is we need black power, brown power, you know, as the Black Panther Party used to say, you know, power to the people, and then they name all the people that need power. And so when you have community control of the police, your businesses, your housing, your schools, the racists can't you know, discriminate and oppress you because you control your own community.
And with that, we will have to wrap up. You've been listening to Howie Hawkins on KBOO Portland on Press Watch. I'm Teresa Mitchell. It's 9:28 Pacific time, and Per Fagering is getting ready to come into the studio to fight the power, and I hope you will stay tuned. I also hope that you will spread the word to someone else about how you can listen to KBOO on 90.7 FM and other frequencies in Cascadia, and on our podcast, which you can find through the directory at kboo.fm. And one thing I learned at GRC is that I'm going to have to get an RSS feed and a little icon if I want this to actually spread as a podcast. So my promise to you is I'm going to figure out how to do that over the next couple of weeks. And I thank you for listening. Stay tuned. And we're going out via 90.7 FM and kboo.fm to all the ships at sea.
Coming up next, it's Fight the Empire with Per Fagering.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Native Artist and Storyteller Symposium on Saturday, October 26th from noon to 6 p.m. at the PSU Native American Student and Community Center in Portland. The Native Artist and Storyteller Symposium will feature artist talks and presentations by Native artists, a panel discussion, a community meal, an artist marketplace, and more. Again, that's the Native Artist and Storyteller Symposium on Saturday, October 26th from noon to 6 p.m. at the PSU Native American Student and Community Center, 710 Southwest Jackson Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. ¶¶